Let me say good morning to Pete.
Good morning to you. So good to be here.
Pete Fornital, everybody. Brian Skirka in from Monmouth Park.
We're here, and we're ready to go. This room is awesome, so it's going to be a fun few days.
First reaction, Jonathan, say good morning. Joe, get in here.
Ready for the grind. It's a long one, but ready to rock.
What's up, everyone?
Joe Metka, everybody, wearing a 1933 Philadelphia Eagles T-shirt, a Frankfurt Yellow Jackets. That is the coolest thing I've ever seen. In the great yellow and blue colors of the Eagles before they made it to Philadelphia, Baker Bowl. Unbelievable. So the reaction, everybody's satisfied with the room?
I love the setup here. I'm really impressed. There's plenty of room. You can feel even before the last chance there's a little bit of energy in here. The screen setup looks better. The final table setup looks cool. The broadcast position is nice. Zero complaints from me about this.
And Brian?
I feel like I need binoculars to see the action on the other side of the room, but I feel like once the mandatory races start, the just roars of everyone in one room is going to be really cool.
What reactions have you heard from Monmouth players? Have you talked about it yet?
Everyone loves it. I mean, I think like I said, being all in one room, being back at Bally's, I think everyone I've talked to is happy.
Excellent. Jonathan?
Yeah, no, I love the room. Don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the little kind of auxiliary room, the privacy of that, but I love this big room. I think the feel's going to be a lot better.
Well, I brought this up with Roger Satina this morning. The fact that it's an equal playing field, that everybody is going to be operating in the same environment as opposed to some that were down in the sports book, some were over in the auxiliary room where you only had that one sick maniac screaming and carrying on to deal with.
Yeah, you're right. Right? Absolutely, absolutely. I think that this is the excitement of this event, right? You don't wake up every day as a horse player with an opportunity to make $800,000. And so for all of these people, 600 plus, to be sitting in one room with that same energy, I'm looking forward to the first mandatory. I'd imagine it'll be buzzworthy.
Joe, are you
he's
qualified?
He's the smartest one of us all.
I didn't qualify. I just came out to support everyone. So,
he's here to party.
Because of work. Well, yeah, that too. But, because of work, it limits my play a whole lot last year, but I had to come out to support all the guys and just have a good time.
Well, and so you actually are the proxy for Nick too, for Cameron.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So you got to drink for two and eat for two. So
yep,
right.
Yeah,
I'll help.
All right, then, well done.
This is my first NHC without Nick, so
yeah. How
it's
are you feeling
weird
about that?
It feels weird.
Your emotions.
Last night I'm usually the person who has to do the table cards. I don't know how I adopted that, but I handled the cards for our table and for the Matisse table. And it felt weird not having Nick's table card.
How did you decide where to sit in a room this big? Like what went into that?
I came in here on Monday. I made a video and I walked around with a video and said, here's where everything is. And then I sent that video to John Nichols, Duke Matisse, Paul Matisse, Marshall Graham.
What did you say? Like a doodle poll?
I mean,
what are we talking about?
I said,
what
do you guys think? And then we decided to sit on the outside so we weren't surrounded by tables.
Right.
And we were close to the machines for Marvin.
Yep.
And that we had a good view at all the TVs. So.
To clarify, Marvin, who runs cash bets, not tournament bets.
Yes.
Somebody brought that up to me, and I was like, no, that's not how it goes. Marvin's not making tournament plays.
Well, he's really just going to grab food and carry on. Is what he's
exactly.
Doing.
He's bringing pizzas in.
And telling stories.
God knows what. And actually, he used to have to schlep all the way from the auxiliary room all the way to the front of the ballroom at Treasure Island.
Right.
So for Marvin, this
huge
is
win.
A big win. Exactly. Exactly. And Brian, I want to quickly, we won't talk about it in full today, but of course, Brian out of Monmouth, and the news yesterday, Matt Hegarty writing up that story, a quick aside, fixed odds wagering and another innovation, Dennis Drazen, is out of control. Dennis is, he's in Washington, he's changing the sports betting landscape, and now he's trying to get this fixed odds wagering, which a lot of people are clamoring for. No, it's not going to be a panacea, but it's something that a lot of people would like to at least have the option of.
Yeah, Dennis is seeing it firsthand is absolutely amazing. Like we have these small ideas that we would, if we could ever do this minute little thing and it happens, we're thrilled. And to your point, Dennis is changing the national landscape on a daily basis. He's, meeting with these people and, just creating, we knew that these meetings were happening, and then boom, the article comes out and it'll be here in a couple months.
Well, and this is a story that we developed coming out of a University of Arizona symposium. and we met the Australian New Zealand group that, as part of the TAB Corporation's work, they had created a parimutuel fixed odds wagering system that they then incorporated into TAB. And on the online side, they were showing me how it worked. And we talked about it a couple of Decembers ago. And they have seen in Australia that the fixed odds very quickly was moving up to be a 50-50 breakout, you know, breakdown of percentage of wagering with the parimutuel side. And people have, you know, clamored. And I know that some of the critics that say, you know, that's not going to solve everything, that handle issues of, that we have. However, it would be a really nice innovation, particularly for new potential players.
100% right.
That don't understand why they bet a horse at 8-1 and then, you know, 20 minutes later, I'm not even talking about late changes. I'm talking about going to the window. Oh, I like this horse. It's 18-1. And then by the time, even before you deal with any of the other crap, they're heading to the post and a new bettor says, well, wait a minute, that horse is now 6-1 and they don't, it's
when you're weaned on sports betting, that's anathema. It's some of the worst anti-marketing for our sport you could have, and solutions that can work, solutions to that problem, I'm all about it. I'm fascinated to see how it works. How is it, do you have somebody who's going to be doing the booking?
Yes, Australia. Australian company called BetMakers.
Interesting.
They made a 10-year deal, and, you know, this, it sort of fits with what Dennis did with William Hill, you know, bringing them in years in advance to be prepared for the sports betting circumstances.
Yeah, and I know, you know, horse racing people obviously too, but especially on the sports side, the barriers to entry are so tough. You know, there's this huge market out there of sports betting people that, I've said this from day one, and Dennis says too, everything we do in the sports world, starting with getting sports, and now this, is to help horse racing. You know, it's not going to be the save-all, but we want to get X percentage of those sports betting people over to start betting horse racing, and this is how we have to do it, to your exact point. If someone is a sports betting person, and we do get them to bet a race at X track, and they bet a horse at 3-1, and, you know, the race goes off 10 minutes later than it's supposed to, and the horse is now 3-2 as they break the gate. Even if the guy or gal wins, they look up like, what just happened? Yeah. Like, this isn't what I expected. So that is how, in our opinion, you know, we're going to get a lot more of that sports betting crowd over to horse racing to do it the same way that they've been used to betting sports their entire lives.
Well, I had that conversation yesterday with Chris Couples, and I know you guys were traveling and just gotten here. It's worth listening to. He was playing daily fantasy sports. He was, you know, very plugged in and to the point where it was, you know, not a job, but he was fully invested. And then slowly over the last 2-3 years has come to completely abandon it because he identifies the horseplay as the better wagering opportunity. And you know, I have said this whole tracking the whole circumstance with Dennis and with his insistence of the states' rights issue and what was going to happen, this is where we've got to be poised to capture people that oh, they think they're going to be a big success betting sports, and they're not, because it's hard. This, they've got a fighting chance, and they can make, as we bet a little, win a lot. They've got just a better opportunity here, and he figured it out. Chris Couples did, and now he's you know, fully invested.
We need more people like that, that's for sure. I mean, the thing about sports betting markets, especially pregame, I would call them unbeatably efficient at times. You know, it's a fun thing to throw money around and yell at the TV during a game, but I would still look to certain corners of horse racing if you sort of forced me to pick one or the other.
Well, and look at, I know that some sports books ended up paying off the people that bet the Pat Mahomes over on rushing yardage.
Oh, that was a tough
and then watched three straight plays as he loses 7, 12, 19 yards. It's the craziest
thing. You
were
on the wrong side of that one, Joe?
I had the over, and I tried to log in after I found out what happened. I'm like, all right, I cashed. I tried to log into FanDuel because I'm in PA. So I tried to log in, and I'm like, the systems were down. Couldn't log in. So I said, all right, I'll just wait till the morning. I wake up in the morning. I access my account. I'm like, wait a minute. Why am I missing money? I go back, and I realize what happened. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. But, of course, FanDuel didn't do anything. But
well, a few points.
Yeah, points bet, I think, refunded your bet.
Yeah.
And I don't know who the other one was. But, yeah, I fell victim to that one.
They used it as a marketing opportunity. And, yeah, in fact, you know, quite a few of the UK the shops, they do that, too.
You'll see that when the Oscars the other year with the Phantom Victory Award and then took away a lot of books they gave back. Not the place where I had my bet down, unfortunately. But it's one of those things. The beat stories in all of gambling, they make your head spin. I thought that was a particularly good one, though.
Let's get a couple of thoughts. And obviously, you know, this kind of roundtable discussion is what we're going to bring you tomorrow and Saturday and Sunday, typically about 2 o'clock to 8 o'clock all 3 days. With Pete and I bringing you just a mayhem that this turns into. But some thoughts about as we get ready. There obviously is the Last Chance First Chance that is getting ready to get started, but you know, some overall thoughts about who's coming in hot and you know, what we're going to see here the next 3 days.
But one of the stories I'm really looking forward to following, I wrote about it the other day, but the story of Robbie Courtney, who I had the opportunity to meet in person yesterday, one of the great human interest stories, a widower who is, he's sort of here playing in memory of his wife, who encouraged him to pursue this dream, this goal of getting here. To me, that just sort of exemplifies what contests and the horse player community are all about. So that's one for me I'm super looking forward to checking out along the way. As for predictions, it's you know, it's such a hard thing to pin down. But I will say, I thought when the betting came out that, and I'm sure the price is long gone, but that Paul Sherman at 150-1 was a proper overlay, one of the first I've seen in the betting on these events.
Yeah, I just, as an overview, this event, I'm probably a rookie amongst these guys. This is my fourth NHC, but just to be now in one room with everyone here, and once those mandatories go and everyone is screaming for different horses in the same race, it's just an unbelievable atmosphere that I can't wait to get back to every year. I'm going to be probably rooting a little bit. I root for all the 48, you know, qualifiers from Monmouth Park this year, but Marianne Hartman, I think I told the story on Pete's show during the year. She won one of our contests this year. You know, an older woman was playing with her husband, but they're horse players, and during sign up, she said, you know, I just want to get alive to one horse today. I really like this horse, and, you know, I hope I have enough money by the time the horse goes. So fast forward through the day, Belmont, the last race, some like 68, 69-1 shot wins the last race wire to wire. This horse was unhavable in the form. So I'm like, that's not going to change anything. Like, no one could have this horse. That was the horse that Mary Hartman was waiting for all day. She literally, legitimate handicapping. You know, she had the reasons why. She liked the jockey. It was just unbelievable. And she obviously catapulted and won the contest. So I'm going to see if she can pull one of those out of her hat again.
That's great.
It's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
You know, this event is interesting for me. It's like, you know, I think it's obviously pretty special that we have a chance at $800,000. You don't have that very often as a horse player, so that's always exciting. It's without a doubt, it's not even close. It's the best horse players convention we could ever dream up. There's 600, 700 like-minded individuals in one room, and I really enjoy that. Walking through lobbies and talking to people, and you can overhear conversations of pace and track bias and all that stuff. So that's always a lot of fun. And then, you know, if it's not going to be me, obviously I hope I'd like to have the 800, but if it's not going to be me, there's a, you know, 20, 25 people that I could really be excited rooting for. Past champions, I'd love to see someone do it twice. Scott Coles, Paul Matisse,
Baychuk.
Baychuk, right. I mean, I'd love to see someone do it twice. I think it'd be such an awesome accomplishment, but, really looking forward to the excitement, man. It's, you know, you wake up on Friday morning and it feels like different than any other day you wake up. Cause like I said, you can go Breeders' Cup Day, you can go to any day at Monmouth or Santa Anita or Keeneland or wherever and have a chance at a score, but you're not really sure how much you could hit. You might hit the pick five for $428, you might hit it for $100,000. If you hit here, you're going to win $800,000, and that's kind of exciting.
11 former champions in the field. That's a pretty healthy number.
That is a healthy number, and I know that one of them, of course, Stanley Bavlish, is one of the guys that won at Bally's.
Oh, right, because it was here for 5 years or so.
So there's an angle. I mentioned Baychuk. Baychuk with a very late qualification. And,
yeah, he was talking about having to get in via the last chance.
And he ended up, what, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago? Joe, who you got your eye on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like Tony Joe, I think he was like 150-1 or something.
He's an interesting player
to
watch.
Of course, Jonathan and the Matisse brothers and all the guys that, you know, I've been around since coming here.
Our buddy Eric Bilek is back.
Yeah, Eric is back in the fold, and Marshall Graham, of course. But I mean, this is just a great, you know, even though, look, I'm not playing in it, but I had to come out just because, you know, just to be here. It's an experience. And if you've never been here for this contest, you definitely have to come and check it out.
There's a few names, and as we talk about the odd sheet, and they're taking $300 in action.
That's real.
As opposed to I don't want to bust on
our
Treasure Islands, but they're
taking it more seriously, well, and not at the same time. They're taking real bets, which is great. But I think the previous odds maker maybe did a little more due diligence before posting the numbers. But hey, they're taking real bets, so God bless them.
Well, and there's a couple of names that in passing. I mean, there's certain headliners we all know, but I'll give you a couple of offbeat players. Ed Peters.
Oh, Ed Peters is a great horse player.
Ed Peters, you know, very quietly. Justin Nicholson,
who has been excellent
on leaderboard every time I look this year. Yeah. Anywhere, cash tournaments and pick and praise. Nicholson. He was all over the place.
He brings the horseman knowledge to it. Ed Peters, second in the BCBC a couple of years ago. Always live when he shows up.
Paul Weiser is due for a real big run.
Yeah, he's been on so many big leaderboards and won so many tournaments, and not somebody who spends and spends, somebody who picks his spots and is very efficient, another guy whose name wouldn't surprise me at all if we see him up there on the final table.
Hot hands. How about Brian Schenberg coming back out of Pegasus, right?
Absolutely.
Just weeks ago.
We've got Brian and Bill. They've got their different styles, but they both are, I think of them as live bank players because they're the type that are just not afraid to go all in at any time on cold numbers. You can't do that here, but you still have to respect the acumen that gets them high up on these live bank leaderboards. And I think that the skill could cross over to some degree. You still, you know, picking the horses is still part of it.
How much advance work, Jonathan? You've certainly surveyed the Friday work, and now the Saturday card's drawn yesterday, and there's some offbeat places. I mean, Tampa's got a terrific card on Saturday.
Right. I'm done with Friday. So now the battle's going to be getting Saturday done. Yeah. I mean, you know, this whole thing to me is all about preparation. It's less about picking, and it's being able to just know what's coming, what's ahead, so that you can make decisions accordingly. So you have to understand how you feel about the last 10 races on a day to know if you need to save some plays for those or if you need to go ahead and fire your shots early. So got Friday done. I'm going to finish Saturday, and I don't look at Sunday until I make the cut. It's just too much work, and it's just focus on getting there first. Like, you're preparing for something you don't know if it's going to happen or not.
And you're also somebody who's not opposed to waking up at 3 in the morning and doing the work that day. It's
right,
not like you're going to be winging Sunday if you happen to get
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I can't work. I don't work at night here. My brain's tired, and I realize I cheat myself. I'll look at a race, and I'm like, oh, a horse can't lose, and then I just go to the next one. And really, it probably requires a little bit more attention to that. And I enjoy an adult beverage, and so in the evening time, so that kind of slows me down as well.
Do we have Roger Satina this morning? He thinks that the target number is going to be a little bit lower than typically we've seen
because of the Friday field sizes.
Field, not just on Friday. I mean, the Saturday card at Santa Anita. There's a couple of good races. The Thunder Road came up terrific. But overall, I think I saw 60 something horses entered for Saturday at Santa Anita overall. But do we have a feel for
that logic?
Targets?
That logic is unassailable. I have to think about in terms of what that probably means. What did we end up with last year? Were the final totals 320-ish for Scott Coles?
I had it here earlier.
Yeah, I mean, 300 is a number that popped into my head as what you'd think about. But I don't know. How important is it for you, JK, in these to have a number in mind, or do you just sort of go more by feel and know approximately where you need to get the type of horses you need to pick?
In live bank contests, I don't ever set that because you just don't know. You, I mean, some guy could bet $10,000 on a 5-to-1 shot. You never, you don't ever know. In these contests, you can kind of have a little bit more of an idea. I look more of the individual horse kind of mental game. I think the consensus around here is maybe 5-to-1, 6-to-1 is kind of the cutoff. I think it's probably going to be 3-to-1, 4-to-1.
That's what Roger said. So, Roger said he'll play more 4-to-1s and 9-to-2s than he has historically.
Right.
Yeah.
And
for that reason.
And it's very hard for – that really means something, Roger saying that, because he is chalk averse.
Yes.
The opposite of you.
The opposite of you.
The chalk-eating weasel over here.
I don't even have that T-shirt yet, which is terrible.
Oh, I had them, and I was going to bring them out, and I forgot. The one that you always forget something, I forgot the chalk eating weasel shirts.
They'll be available soon at inthemoneyplayerspodcast.com. We got to pull up, unfortunately, but listen, we got 3 hours live tomorrow morning. We have the weekend preview, and that will include Dick Tamaro. He'll be here in spirit, and then he'll be here looking at the cross country pick five. Saturday is Aqueduct, Tampa, and Oaklawn, the King Cotton, the Jimmy Wingfield, and the Suncoast, the Tampa Bay, and the Sam Davis. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We'll get Nick's opinions. We'll check in with Marty McGee, who is at Oldsmar tomorrow, and everything. The Sewanee and that maiden race we talked about. I want to thank Jonathan Kinchin, Joe Metka, Philly Joe, Brian Skirka of Monmouth Park, Pete Fornatale. You'll be so sick of me and Pete by Sunday night. And who else? Dick Powell was on this morning, and Roger Satina, of course. Tony Black with the up-to-the-minute news about the jocks issue in Philly, and Steve Haskin. Have a great day, everybody. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9. Archive, podcast, etc. later this afternoon at SteveBeck.com. Talk to you tomorrow.